Okay, a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Schwartz. Not doing long introductions today. Rabbi of OZ, we sat next to each other in the Beit Midrash in Yeshiva University many, many years ago. Rabbi Schwartz, of course, one of the great rabbinic leaders in New York City, teacher of a wonderful teacher at Yeshiva also, and really a thriving shul. So it's a pleasure and honor to welcome Rabbi Schwartz back to give a little share. Rabbis are very busy the week before Rosh Hashanah, so we appreciate your taking the time out. Bakasha, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Just finished the daf about 5 minutes ago, and it just rushed in, and it's such a pleasure to take part in your amazing program. And so thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share a little pre-Rosh Hashanah Torah. My topic is Yirmiyahu chapter 31, which Rashi and Heichal Rashi, Yitzchak Avineri says was Rashi's favorite perek in Tanakh. And there were a few different Talmidim who expressed that, and it's why of all the prakim of Tanakh to choose for a Haftorah for Rosh Hashanah, you take a sefer that the Gemara calls Kula Puranuta, and the Halacha says you're allowed to learn the negative parts of Yirmiyahu, implies that there are some positive parts of Yirmiyahu, not too much, but chapter 31 is the most amazing parak in Tanakh that connects to Rosh Hashanah in theme. In the first day Rosh Hashanah is really because Chazal say the events took place on Rosh Hashanah. But the theme of chapter 31 of Yirmiyahu is so crucial to understanding what Rosh Hashanah is, because it is a very cryptic holiday. It's Bakesa Leom Chagenu. Its nature, as you just heard, is hidden from us. And the shofar is not connected to Rosh Hashanah. It has to connect to Rosh Hashanah through a Gzeirah Shavah with the Ovel of Yom Kippur and some other psukim in Sefer Bamidbar, but Yirmiyahu really places very clearly before us where, I'm going to quote some of what Rabbi Kelman just mentioned from Sefer Nehemiah as well, that places before us the idea that a national return, which is what he's referring to, is very much paradigmatic in both directions to a personal return. We speak of the personal return that each of every one of us has to take to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by listening to the shofar, by hearing all of the liturgies that refer to mothers crying for their children, Chana for Shmuel, Hagar for Yishmael, Sarah for Yitzchak, Rachel Levakal Baneha in this Haftorah. And then Chazal telling us that the Trua, the Targum to Trua Yevava, is meant to sound like a woman crying, even a wicked woman like Sisera's mother who's consoled about her son being late from the battle because he's bringing home so many Jewish captives arm in arm from one to another, all kinds of women and men as slaves. And they're all there. She's consoled by that. And yet we learn from this woman, 100 letters in the Pasuk that we derive, Batya Beveim Sisera. This is all of our mothers crying for us to come home. Who knows us better than our mother to help us find ourselves at this important time of year? And the paradigm for this personal return is the national return. Because Yirmiyahu, by chapter 31, has already told his people again and again and again, you're going to lose the land, you're going to lose the temple, you're going to lose the kingship. And there's only one response, one proper response at this point is surrender. Because if you surrender, I have it on inside information, this is chapter 25 of Yirmiyahu, that within 70 years of Nebuchadnezzar's first year, another king will destroy the Babylonians and be kindly disposed towards you to allow you to return and even help you return. Now, surrender is final. Surrender is not a good idea if the Babylonians are going to stick around for 500 years and torment us and wipe us out. But the people didn't exactly heed this call. They were supposed to surrender so that the Yirmiyahu says the Babylonians will treat us well if we surrender. Don't make them besiege Jerusalem. If we surrender, they'll allow hundreds of thousands of Jews to remain. They may not destroy the temple. They may not kill the king. They put us to confiscatory taxation. But if we surrender, they'll be kind to us. In the end, of course, they did not surrender. It was disastrous. But they did allow Yirmiyahu to maintain a community in Israel and to choose a leader. He chose a man named Gedaliah, the son of a man named Achikam ben Shafan, who actually saved Yirmiyahu's life when they wanted to kill him in the wake of making such a claim of the destruction. Then Yirmiyahu in chapter 29 speaks of a different 70-year Galut period from the time of the destruction of the temple to the time of its renewal. So there are two separate 70-year cheshbonot in Yirmiyahu, which caused confusion. They didn't have a Sefer Yirmiyahu like we do. So Daniel was confused, Zechariah was confused. The later Nevi'im, when it was time to come home, the Gemara takes advantage of this and says Achashverosh was also confused, and he made the cheshbon wrong over when the Jews should come back. So it was confusing, however you want to look at it. And Yirmiyahu was hoping that at least with Gedalia, we can maintain a community that was so crucial, because he knew that this Persian king, Yeshayahu mentions him, his name is Koresh, this Persian king will allow the exiles to return, not only the exiles from Babel, the exiles from Ashur from 120 years earlier, the 10 tribes will return in great numbers. If only we maintain a community in Israel and keep the land tilled, keep the vineyards worked, and keep it would be the difference like making Aliyah in 1870 or 1970. So that if there are Jews in Israel all this time, when it comes time to call them back, they'll come, because there's a land beckoning them, and a good land beckoning them. But alas, they killed Gedalia too. And then they even still the Babylonians allowed Yirmiyahu to remain until they forcibly took him to Egypt to spend his last days there. It's really a very sad commentary that they didn't heed Yirmiyahu's call for preparing for the end of the 70 years by remaining in Israel. So chapter 31 is Yirmiyahu's reference to the return to the land. And he starts off by saying, Ko amar Hashem matzachein bamidbar. So I don't have the text in front of you here, but I'm just going to concentrate on just a few psukim. Yirmiyahu is acting like a good marital therapist. He's saying that the marriage has withered. We have the 10 tribes already gone. Yehuda is next. And maybe, just maybe, we can save this marriage by recalling how wonderful it was early on. Yirmiyahu did this in the second parak, perhaps even more famous psukim that will enter the liturgy of the Zichronos psukim in Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Zacharti lo chesed nirayach avas kulo sayach lechtech acharabim bar. I remember our youth, the youthful love that you shared with me. Rashi says that you went into the desert, v'gam tzedolo asulahem. You had such abiding faith in me that you didn't even take provisions into the land, into the desert. So the Sforno says that they just followed God, where he took them to a place where there were 70 palms, and then they quickly left. They should have wanted to stay there. No, God says to leave, tell me when to go. So that whatever it is, that the early part of a marriage is one that you would like to hopefully can come back to this loving relationship. And that's how Yirmiyahu begins this Haftorah. And he speaks of the abiding love in the beginning of this Haftorah. And he refers to the return to the land, that you will once again, speaking as if though the land is already destroyed, once again bring farmers and bring notsrim, what an unfortunate word that he uses for the people who will guard the land, because chapter 31 is also a very, very strong polemical chapter, because Yirmiyahu refers to a brit chadasha, a new covenant in this land. The Christians use this chapter as their source of the New Testament. The New Covenant is not a new Torah. It's important to inject that into this discussion. Our return to Israel is very much a return to Torah. Adarabba, that's what the shofar in Rosh Hashanah is about. It's hidden. It's to recall the shofar of Har Sinai. The whole point of tshuva is always to Torah. Nehemiah chapter 8, which talks about meeting on the seventh month, and they're eating sweet foods, and they attend at a body of water at the Shar HaMayim, or perhaps the earliest source for something that resembles Tashlich. And it's a crown god, the king again over his land where the people are returning. And the imagery of Rosh Hashanah, even though the words don't appear, the date is there, the beginning of the seventh month. The thing they're doing that's more pronounced than anything is that Ezra lifts up the Torah and shows to everybody the earliest Hagbah, right? The idea that it's not only the Baal Kriya and the Oleh that gets part of Torah. Everybody, man, woman, and child, think of the mitzvah of Hakel that we just read, gets to look at the Torah and say, this is my Torah. We all have a share in it. In the ancient Near East, only the high priests and a few choice people got to be involved in the holy text. Here the Torah is Ve'ele Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lifneihem. Ezra holds up the Torah for everyone to see, and then he reads it, perhaps pointing to the more correct minhag of the Sfardim to do Hagba before Yilein. We Ashkenazim do Hagba after Yilein. So, but in Ezra, they first did Hagba. We showed off the Torah to everybody, and it says, Vamdo, everybody stood up, and then he read Torah. And it's Rosh Hashanah, because Rosh Hashanah is profoundly a memorial, a remembrance of the shofar at Har Sinai, which is why every single day we point to this. Our daily call for tshuva is Hashiveinu Avinu Lesora Secha. God, return us to our Torah. Return us to our land. Return us to find ourselves. So this, what is the Bris Hadashah according to our interpretation? The Bris Hadashah is very simple. It's what we experience every Rosh Hashanah is a Bris Hadashah. It's Hischadshus. It's to renew ourselves. The Bris Hadashah, the Ramban says in his parish to this week's parasha, is Umol Hashem es levavcha ves levav zaracha. For goodness sakes, Yirmiyahu himself says so. He says you won't have to teach people to follow God. You won't have to teach people to follow the Torah. It'll be written in their hearts and written in their arms. The Christians have distorted this, have perverted this to mean that you don't have to keep the Torah anymore. It's just in your heart. Where does it say that? It says you won't have to teach people to follow the Torah. They will keep it in, as if though it's ingrained in them. That's Umol Hashem es levav chaves levav zaracha. In the Torah has to use the carrot and the stick. Think of the beginning of the Tochacha that tells us all the rewards of keeping Torah and all the punishments of not keeping Torah. I submit to you those are not punishments, they're consequences. Hashem doesn't punish us to that extent. These are consequences throughout history. So that what Hashem is saying at the end of all this is a time will come where the land of Israel is so built up again. Od Nivneis, you will be built and you'll build up the rest. There's a program, a beautiful program in Israel called Livnot Ulihibanot, where they study for half the day and they help build houses for poor people. And they help in the fields. They build up the land while building themselves. And they derive their name in the north of Israel from this parish. So we're here to build up, but to build up through Torah. The only Zionist, according to chapter 31 of Yirmiyahu, is a religious Zionist. It could only be because the whole point of the return is to return through Torah. Of course, the Bris Hadashah has to be in such a parish. It's not that the Haftorah ends before that. But the Bris Hadashah is this new covenant that we forge in our own hearts. I won't have to be convinced to follow this Torah by being given a carrot and a stick. It's not that. I'm going to approach Yom Kippur with the intense joy of knowing that this is ingrained in me. It becomes part of my heart. It's wrapped around my arm and it goes straight to my brain. It's part of me. So that you won't have to convince me anymore to do it. Right, so this is the true meaning of the Bris Hadashah according to the Ramban. And the Yirmiyahu refers to the return of, in the beginning of the Haftorah, which was the argument used by Menashe ben Yisrael to Oliver Cromwell. This Haftorah was used to convince him to allow Jews to return to England. Because if you want your messianic aspiration to come true based on Yirmiyahu 31, he understood the importance of this parak to Christian theology. He said the Jews have to be allowed to be returned back to where they came from. And we were in England until 1290. Hundreds of years, there was not a Jew in England. And Oliver Cromwell used the arguments of Pasuk Vav and Zion of Bar HaTorah. And he'll take everybody back to the place where they came from. The blind, the lame, everyone will return. You know, when people used to come to Ellis Island, they would look in your mouth, they would look in your eyes, and if a doctor didn't like what he sees, he would, in 1890, 1910, they would quarantine you and send you right back on the next ship. We don't want any sick, any iver, any piseach. We don't want sort of burdens on this new country that you're coming to. Think back to when the holy country of Israel took on those Ethiopians, the first time masses of of Africans were taken out of that country to new land, not to be sold into slavery. They were taken to save their lives to Israel. Remember the heroic actions of Operation Moses to bring all those Ethiopians to their homeland. And they took the sickest ones first. They took the ones who were bami ver upiseach to fulfill this prophecy to bring back to our homeland. And they'll come with great joy, bivchi, crying, the cry of joy, as the Haftarah continues. And kifada Hashem es Yaakov u'kehelo miyad chazak mimenu, such an important pasuk that it enters our nightly liturgy as we face the evening and the murkiness of Erev, the irbuvia of Erev. We refer to our Haftarah to say that God redeems us from those who want to do us harm. And then, this is the really the main focus, I think the clear connection to what Rosh Hashanah is all about is the reference to Rachel. And this is considered the highlight of the Haftarah. This Kol Barama Nishma is that there is a voice coming out of Rama and Rachel refuses to be consoled over her sons. This is Pasuk Yudalit. She's crying over her sons, Rachel Mavakol Baneha, Me'ano Lihinochem Al Baneha. She cannot be consoled like her husband who couldn't be consoled over Yosef because he has a sense that he's still alive. Me'ano Lihinochem Al Baneha, Ki Einenu. Abarvanel points to the grammatical inconsistency in Pasuk Yudalit to not being able to be consoled over her sons. Plural, ki einenu, in singular. It should be ki einom. So Abravanel responds in typical Abravanel fashion. He says that Baneha, Rachel had two sons. She had a son, Binyamin, and she had a son, Yosef. So Yosef is Haben Yakir Li Ephraim. Yosef became emblematic of the northern tribes. Yosef is Ephraim because the kings came from Ephraim and a few came from Manasseh. But all the kings of the north were from Yosef. Well, we have two trees in Yechezkel close to the prophecy that Rabbi Kelman mentioned before that refers to Rosh Hashanah in Haftarah Vayigash, where he refers to two trees, one that has the word Yehud on it, one that has the word Yosef on it, because there were two kingdoms, there were two Mashiachs, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, the two trees in Zechariah and Haftarah of Chanukah that refer to these two Mashiachs, if you will, that there are hints in Tanakh over two different comings. So, of course, Christians do what they do with that. I didn't mean for this shiur to be a polemic, but we have two Mashiachs because we believe it's not two different times for the same Mashiach to come. It's two different Mashiachs. Mashiach ben Yosef, that the Vilna Gaon wrote a lot about, that helps to pave the way for Mashiach ben David to come. Mashiach ben Yosef is the name of anybody who helps to build up the land. That person is Mashiach ben Yosef. It's a movement, if you will. That's why he sent all his students to Israel and why the Stam Minhag Ashkenaz in Israel is the Minhag Agra, because of all the students he sent there. So this is Rachel has two sons because her two sons were part of the two kingdoms. Yosef is the northern kingdom, Binyamin, who were part of the Yehuda kingdom. So she cannot be consoled because ki einenu. She can see already that the Jews did not make their peace with the Babylonians. The Jews did not remain in the land. A horrific, paltry 1 in 100 Jews who were living at the time went back to Israel with Ezra and Nehemiah for two reasons. One, because life was so bad in Israel, the land became so fallow that when you don't touch land for 70 years, you're putting a shovel to a rock. You can picture, you know, the pictures of the malaria and the difficulties of the heroic Jews who came to Israel in the 1870s, in the 1880s. So that's what it ended up being. So only 1 in 100 Jews heeded the call from Ezra and Nehemiah, heeded the call from Haggai and Zechariah. Only 1 in 100 Jews came back to Israel, 42,360, with Ezra. It could have been very different. But Rachel already was crying because she knows that Yosef isn't coming back. He ain't nenu. But she does feel consoled somewhat because Binyamin will come back with Yehuda. And only 1/12 of the nation, known as Jews, Shevet Yehuda, came back. No Zvuluns, no Gadites, no Naphtaliites, no Danites. Right? They were mixed in. It does say in Ezra, Kol HaKohol Ke'echad, where Rashi says this is a hint to the fact that all the 12 tribes returned, representatives of the 12 tribes, but they didn't end up being distinct. This is Nogea. Tosfos in Gittin says to the question of whether there was Yovel and Bayis Sheni, because Yovel requires representatives of all the 12 tribes. It's a big Yaakov Emden in Megillah that uses it with great Bakiyas, all the hints in Tanakh that seem to show that representatives of the 12 tribes did indeed return. But alas, we only called ourselves Jews. You know, Mordechai is from Shevet Binyamin. He called himself the Ish Yehudi because everyone who returned just became called Jews, Yehudim, from Shevet Yehuda. But it could have been very different had they heeded Yirmiyahu's call for peace with the Babylonians or surrender to the Babylonians, and with the insider information that they're not going to last much longer. So Rachel plays this outsized role. Rashi says, I heard a medrash of why Rachel more than everybody else. If I asked everybody listening now, you might say something like, well, Kever Rachel was on the way to the Golos. That's very questionable. Why the Babylonians would march them south to Mama Rachel in Beis Lechem on their way north to Bavel, Kimitzafon Tipatach Ra'ah, in the beginning of Yirmiyahu, the Haftorah of the first of the 3 weeks, that it's questionable. I'm not going to get into the geography of where Kever Rachel is, because in Sefer Shmuel, it seems that it's outside of a Benjaminite city to the north of Israel, of Yerushalayim, in a place near Tzeltach, where I was there recently, a few years ago, and the willows there cry all night, and you can hear them blowing in the wind in the wintertime. They sound like a woman crying. Be that as it may, the real reason, Rashi says, why Rachel is chosen here to accompany us into the Golos is because of Menashe. Menashe ben Chizkiah turned Israel into kimat a polytheistic state. What was his svara? I never like to give a svara for Avodah Zarah. There is never a svara for Avodah Zarah. But you see, the Avodah Zarahs he did incorporate into Israel were all Assyrian Avodah Zarahs. His father, Chizkiyahu, managed to save himself from the Assyrians by serving Hashem, by taking down the Baal, by taking down the Bamos, by removing all the Agalos. But Menashe was too weak, and he ruled Nebuch 55 years. And he filled Jerusalem with the blood from gate to gate, the blood of the dissenters who didn't want to worship as Avodah Zarah. So he not only incorporated Avodah Zarah and Baal, the worst of Achav, the worst of the northern tribes, into Yehuda, he even brought Avodah Zarah into the Beis HaMikdash, and he brought Avodah Zarah into the Kodesh Kedoshim. I'm not telling you Medrash now, this is in Tanakh. So now here is a Medrash though. Rashi says, I heard a Medrash, it's in the Psikta, it's not a Gemara. I heard a Medrash that when God wanted to utterly just wipe out the people of Israel, and he said, I've had it with them. It's too much, I can't take it. So all of the Avos and Imahos came, marched before God, and pleaded on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And each one gave a reason for something they did for God to forgive the people. And each one was slugged up. Each one was removed. Each one was shown the door and said, this is not good enough. Avraham, it's not good enough. You're ready to give your son. Yitzchak is not good enough that you're ready to sacrifice yourself. All straight through, each one is shown the door. Until Rachel comes up and starts her argument by saying, God, whose mercies are greater, yours or man's? And God says, my mercies are greater than the most merciful human being who has ever lived. And Rachel says, so tell me, why do you want to destroy the people now more than any other time in history? Your mercies seem to have forgiven us in the past. What new ground was broken now? So Hashem says, listen, they have been worshiping Avodah Zarah throughout Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Melachim. But this one was different. It's one thing where the wife commits adultery by going to a third place or going to the lover's home. But what Menashe did was to bring Avodah Zarah into my home. That's a wife who commits adultery in my bed. By bringing Avodah Zarah into the Kodesh Kedoshim, that broke new ground, and I cannot forgive that. So Rachel said, but Ribono Shel Olam, if your mercies are greater than man's, consider back a long time ago that Yaakov worked for me for 7 years. When I got wind that my sister would be terribly shamed, my father thought, oh, this is my chance to get Leah married off. when I got wind that my father was planning this clamp to give away my sister, all I had to do was show up there and, you know, say, hi, you know, it's me. I knew she would be shamed. So I gave her the signs that Yaakov and I made up because we thought our father would try to pull a fast one like that. Say, there's another Rachel in the shuk. I have another daughter named Rachel. So Rachel, you know, Yaakov tried to be as clear as possible. Rachel, bitcha, ktana. Right? So we knew that our father would try to pull a fast one, and he did. But I considered it more important, even though I waited 7 years, I considered it more important that my sister not be ashamed. And I let her into my husband's bed. So if I, a human being, whose mercies are not as great as yours, was ready to do this to save another human being shame, bonus shalom, it's up to you to forgive Klal Yisrael for what they did. I don't condone it, but you have to forgive them. And Hashem's response is Pasuk Tetzayin. Yesh tikvah lachri seichnu Hashem, yishavu banim l'gvulam. Yesh tochor l'pula seichnu Hashem, yishavu me'eretz oyev. Hashem tells Rachel, stop crying, Rachel. Mini kolech mi bechi ve'enayach mi dima. Right? You got it. You convinced me. Right? Rachel, if you asked Rachel at the time, did you know that your actions today will save Klal Yisrael 1,000 years from now? Why did you do this? He goes, well, I just felt it was the right thing to do. Each and every one of us before Rosh Hashanah can create mountains and mountains of goodwill. Each one of us with one kind action create angels that support us for 1,000 years. At the very least, can support us through this hectic Yomim Noroyim season, which starts off with days of awe. We can't say hallel because the books of life and death are open. And yet the Yerushalmi says, but wear white clothing. Rejoice. Eat sweet foods. Sing. Because you can be certain. If you listen to the shofar, you hear the voice. You hear Rachel. You hear the mothers crying for us. You'll be moved towards doing the right thing. You'll vouchsafe a good year. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu vouchsafes for Rachel. And then he concludes with I won't have time to go into this, but I will give a shameless plug for my Haggadah. The very end of my Haggadah, which explains why it's at Pesachlo, why it's the woman who has to engage the withdrawn child. Jewish community was very withdrawn towards the end of, in the middle of the 20th century. Predictions were being made that there will be no more Orthodox Jews in America by the year 2000. I saw that in the 1950 now defunct American Jewish yearbook. By 2000, no more room for Orthodox Jews in America. What happened is what appears in this Haftorah. Nekevot is Soviet Gover. That a woman will be part of this. That a woman will be encircled in the groom. It's because Yirmiyahu had said so many times before, no one is going to want to get married. So when he said, Od Yishama Ba'are Yehuda, that's why we start the song with the word Od. People want to get married again because times are going to get great again. So that's why at a wedding we replicate this prophecy by a woman encircling a man. But it's beyond that. It goes more than that. It's that the woman will be very much part and parcel of this tshuva movement that Nekevot Soviet Gaver, that the education of women in the middle of the 20th century was considered important to open up yeshivas. My mother didn't have a yeshiva. She had to go to public school. Her three younger sisters had a yeshiva in the Bronx. But she and her next two sisters didn't have yeshivas. When we considered important that women also get a good education, that we can inculcate in the Rochels of the world the necessary arguments to make to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save Klal Yisrael, that's, I submit to you, which was made, what made learning Torah so important for not only the women, but to inculcate that importance for men too. So that I submit to you, you can look at, I've made my Haggadah is called the Four Sons Haggadah. It's the very last page of the Haggadah, which shows why it's at Pesachlo that helps the withdrawn child come out of his withdrawn state to be a leader in Klal Yisrael. And we've withdrawn this year. Let's wake ourselves up with the shofar, hear Rachel's cry, hear the cry of Sarah for Yitzchak and the cry of Hannah for Shmuel. And do what we need to do to make this a ksiva v'chasima tova for all. I took my extra minute, Rabbi Kelman,
That's
now
fine.
I give it
Now I see
to
two speakers have connected Pesach and Rosh Hashanah. So very good. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz. Thank you very much, Richie and Sharon Ehrman.
Oh, Yishkayach, Yishkayach.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Malka is on board, and we will start in 45 seconds. And please feel free to take an extra minute and a half. That's why we built in our 50-minute break, so you get your full 29 and a half minutes. Hi, Malka.